Chat.
Malcolm Turnbull announced the laws of maths do not apply here.
One of my favourite brands of comedy, Ariel, is brown people and black people making fun of white people.
Senators have been dropping like flies recently.
Shouting out the fact that in the Knowles Carter family, women just have one name.
Back Chat on FBI Radio.
Hello and welcome to Backchat on 94.5. This is your freshest wrap of news and current affairs from the week. I'm Ariel Bogle.
And I'm Osman Faruqi. And today, Ariel Bogle, is by-election day in New England. Yeah.
Woo. What a moment. The nation stops with by-election in New England.
Yeah, the by-election that stops a nation. New England is the northwest New South Wales seat, kind of including Armidale and Tamworth, that Barnaby Joyce is recontesting after he was booted out of Parliament last month for being a secret Kiwi citizen. And so there's been, there's been campaigning going on. There's been there's been that funny story about Gina Rinehart giving Barnaby Joyce an award.
A giant novelty check.
But what's really been going on in the backdrop has been a lot of internal turmoil amongst the coalition, particularly some bitter infighting between the National Party that Barnaby Joyce is obviously the leader of, and the Liberal Party. And the Nationals are not happy. In fact, they're really, really unhappy. Here's what the New South Wales Deputy Premier, a guy called John Barilaro, had to say about federal politics on 2GB this week.
Turnbull should go. That's what you're saying?
Well, my view is Turnbull should give Australians a Christmas gift and go before Christmas.
There you are. Good to talk to you. Hang in there, will you? We need someone who's got the guts that you've got to stand up and say what the public are saying.
It's the Deputy Premier of the New South Wales Nationals and the leader of the New South Wales Nationals telling Alan Jones that Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister, should quit before Christmas. Well, the first question is, Ariel, who is this guy?
Good question. Well, I do follow politics and state politics to a degree, and John Barilaro is not hugely on my radar, but he did certainly make a name for himself this week.
Yeah, like, I mean, I write about politics full time, and I feel like I should not admit this, but, like, I honestly did not know he was a deputy. Like, I'd heard about him, he was, like, education minister or something like that. I, like, haven't really heard much from him in the state political sphere, and now he's burst onto the federal scene, and he's said that the Prime Minister should resign, which is a way to get your name out there, I guess.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because in the wake of the Queensland election, of course, looks like Labor will be back in. The One Nation Party did not, you know, get as many seats as many expected. There were some really big concerns that they would just be taking a whole swath of Liberal National Party seats. That didn't bear out. So I'm not quite sure what a New South Wales Deputy Premier is so worried about.
Yeah, totally. It's weird. Is he genuinely concerned that the direction the federal government's going in is alienating the National Party base, or is he just causing mischief because he doesn't like Malcolm Turnbull and there are elements within the Liberal Party and the National Party that want him gone for someone more conservative?
It's interesting because, of course, Malcolm Turnbull said that the Queensland election result was not because of federal issues, and there's been some strong debate about that because I think the seats that were lost in Queensland, a lot of the people from those seats are pretty upset and think that it in fact was the same-sex marriage debate, the Banking Royal Commission debate, a whole heap of federal issues that have really been capturing the headlines and probably had a lot of impact in Queensland.
Yeah, it is interesting to see that the government did backflip on the Banking Royal Commission. It was the National Party, Queensland Nationals in particular, George Christensen and a few others, really Barry O'Sullivan, really pushing this idea of a Royal Commission to the banks. The government refused it this week. They finally signed up to it. And the Nationals will probably claim that as a bit of a win, but it's going like this tension is clearly not going to dissipate. And this week, the fact that John Barilaro dumped on Turnbull this week, the week before Barnaby Joyce's by-election, he's probably still going to win, but it's not a good look. And Barnaby Joyce was really unhappy with what John Barilaro said. In fact, Barnaby Joyce said, "The worst possible insult in politics is you've done something unhelpful. It's worse than drowning a dog, worse than murder. This is definitely in the category of very unhelpful." So Barnaby Joyce, the leader of the National Party, just said that the Deputy Premier of New South Wales, the leader of the New South Wales National Party, committed a crime worse than murder and worse than drowning a dog.
Hectic. Didn't know politics was so hectic. But it's interesting too because New South Wales probably going to have a election maybe March 2019.
Yeah, it's fixed term, so it'll be March 2019. Yeah, yeah.
So if a federal election does not happen before then, I suppose the LNP in New South Wales will be kind of worried what impact federal politics will have because the people of New South Wales, the people of Sydney, will not be able to have their say on how the country is going at a national level until beyond the New South Wales elections. They might take the opportunity to punish the locals here. I wonder if that's the fear.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, I think the broader thing happening is this fragmentation within conservative politics. So we've seen people like Cory Bernardi split off from the Liberals and start their own thing. There's Liberal Democrats that have been around for a bit. Now One Nation is making inroads. And even though it hasn't, they only just picked up one seat in Queensland, they got 14% of the vote, and that's something that the Nationals will fear in future elections. In New South Wales, the One Nation Party is in fact not even registered to run in elections, but we have our own conservative, like, minor party. It's the Shooters and Fishers, and they've had a presence in state parliament for quite a long time, and they have in fact this year in a by-election won a seat off the National Party. So there is a concern that the conservative vote is like drifting away from the Liberals and Nationals and going to these minor parties. And obviously John Barilaro, even if this might not have been the best way to deal with it, is worried for exactly what you said, that maybe people will give the state government a kicking while they want to actually take the baseball bat to Turnbull. They're not going to have that chance, so they might take it out on Gladys Berejiklian instead.
Exactly. And I don't think Australia has tested exactly what it would be like to have a truly functional far-right party on the ballot. Because One Nation, of course, I mean, Pauline Hanson, it's a personality cult for Pauline Hanson, in my view. Without her, it doesn't exist. And the candidates they fielded in Queensland, for example, were questionable at both. I think if you want to go see what a train wreck press conference looks like, go look at the candidate who, it turned out, owned a sex shop with a questionable Facebook page.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing against sex shops. But maybe, you know, make sure that
questionable Facebook pages is something media, we absolutely are against.
Social media should be locked down before you start fielding candidates. Just one suggestion.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, Pauline Hanson, she's been around for a long time. She obviously does have the ability, just through her name, to attract votes and attract a section of the population that is into her ideas or into the idea of her as an anti-politician shaking up the system. But what always surprises me is, like, watching her press conferences and stuff, she's just not very good at public speaking. And as you've outlined, like, the Queensland election, organisationally, they were incompetent. They had so many scandals, so many candidates quit, all this stuff happened. And she still pulled nearly 15% of the statewide vote. So, like you, I'm kind of worried about what might happen if we had, like, a credible, you know, far-right party.
And I'd certainly say that Pauline Hanson's appeal is nothing to do with her awkwardness in front of the camera. In fact, that might be part of her appeal.
No, true. That's a really good point. Yeah, people like the look of her as not a polished politician.
Yeah. So we're going to get more into the right wing next up with Josh Butler, a journalist who went to see some Milo Yiannopoulos content this week. That should be pretty interesting. But first we have Sampology with Thicker Than Water. No, we don't. There he is. One moment. I think it's playing.
I can sing Sample of Thicker Than Water. Actually, I haven't heard this song before. I guess the other thing that's happened in politics this week that we mentioned earlier was the banking Royal Commission, which the government, as we're saying, the National Party has been pushing it for a long time. The Liberal Party kept saying no. And then weirdly this week, before the Liberal Party could announce its backflip, all the banks came out, because the banks obviously don't like the idea of a Banking Royal Commission. And they were saying, no, we don't need it. It's totally unnecessary. It's like, you know, why do we need to get beat up on? And then all four of them came out and said, you know what, it's time for a Banking Royal Commission. And then the government looked pretty silly.
Very interesting situation. I'm going to try this music again, but there's a language warning on this one. If it does play, it's Omar Musa with Assimilate. You're listening to Backchat on FBI 94.5. That was Omar Musa with his track Assimilate featuring Tasman Keith. And to continue the proud tradition of Australia taking people the rest of the world don't want, witness the First Fleet, I suppose, professional right-wing troll Milo Yiannopoulos is in Australia right now. A former editor at Breitbart, his Troll Academy tour is travelling across the country right at this minute. And he's made some waves here, of course. Senator David Lionhelm asked him to come speak at Parliament House. The Greens were not happy about that. The Daily Telegraph is taking him seriously, giving him column inches. And basically, he's having a pretty dream run in Australia. Josh Butler, an editor from Huffington Post, was at a Milo press conference this week, which was, judging by your Twitter feed, a pretty bizarre occasion. What was it like?
Yeah, it was just, it was super bizarre. It was, he had this presser in, it was like a little sort of screening room, sort of theatreette thing at a hotel in Sydney. And I turned up and I was sort of expecting something to sort of be there. Like, you know, like he's the kind of guy like, oh, you know, the left just follow me around and they protest me and they try and shut me down, that sort of thing. And there was like one confused looking cop sort of standing on the door being like, what am I here for? And this big security guy being like, sort of standing there. And so you walk downstairs and he's, I got there a bit late and he'd already kind of started, and there's a bunch of cameras and all that sort of stuff there. And I walked in and I couldn't like quite, I looked at him and I went, you know, I just did like a double take. He was wearing this like bizarre big like military kind of jacket sort of thing, like not like a like a camo sort of thing, but like a something that you'd imagine like they would have worn in like the French Revolution kind of stuff,
like with Chris Martin
with the video. That sort of thing, that sort of Coldplay vibe he had in those videos. And he had like the big epaulettes on the shoulders, like the big shoulder pad sort of things, this massive like medal on his chest as well. It was the size of like a small kind of dinner plate. It was just bizarre. And he's like, he talked for a bit and he goes, oh, look, I'm going to take some questions from the audience now. And my policy is you have to give me 2 compliments before you ask me a question. And everyone went, because there's like, you know, journalists from like the big TV networks, or a few like, you know, print journalists, like the decent journalists were there, and they all went, and he goes, I've also got a reverse discrimination policy, so I'm only taking questions from straight white men. And everyone went, and like one of the female journalists, it was mostly female journalists that were there, and one of the female journalists put her hand up to start with, and he goes, oh, honey, this is not my policy, blah, blah, blah. And he waited until a man took a question first. And I was just, oh God, it was just the most bizarre thing. And I don't know, we talked a lot about, you know, this week about, you know, normalizing these sort of people, about not giving them, you know, interviews on their terms and that sort of thing. And everyone's kind of asking the same questions. They're like, so what do you think about same-sex marriage in Australia? And what are you here to do? What do you think about political correctness?
They were just softballing him, basically.
Someone asked him about 18C, I think. And I was just like, what does this guy know about 18C? Like, it's just like, who cares what this guy thinks about Australian politics? Like, he wouldn't have known who half these politicians were until a week ago, and Max Marks and his publicist told him about them. It was just a very odd press conference. It was just a bizarre situation.
I think we want to kind of go a little bit more into detail into some of that stuff. But before that, do you mind just walking us through setting the scene a bit? What's his deal? Like, what's been happening for Milo? Why is he in Australia? Why do people want to buy tickets to see him?
Yeah, he's like, that's a very good question, actually. he's one of those guys, you know, part of this collective, you know, sort of alt-right sort of thing we hear about a lot in America. And like we mentioned, like, you know, he was part of Breitbart, which was, you know, this alt-right sort of propaganda platform, more or less, that's running as a news site. And he's got in, you know, a lot of trouble in, you know, it's been very good for his brand, but, you know, he's got in a lot of trouble in recent years. Like, he was part of the whole Gamergate controversy. Like, he was part of, you know, harassing Leslie Jones, who was one of the actresses in the Ghostbusters reboot. You know, it's just terrible, too. He got banned from Twitter over that stuff. You know, there's all these interviews that have come out, you know, in the last couple of years where he's talked about, you know, pedophilia and all, like, you know, there's, you know, been criticisms that he was, you know, sort of been an apologist for pedophilia, talking about how it's, you know, okay for young men to have relationships with older men, that sort of thing. And yeah, I guess the most recent one, he got in a lot of trouble in this really good BuzzFeed report, where it sort of came out that he was, this amazing video came out, where he was singing karaoke in front of this crowd of people, which included Richard Spencer, who's like a neo-Nazi kind of dude, who's involved in the Charlottesville rallies. And they're all doing Nazi salutes in the front row and that sort of thing. So Milo's come out here now and he's like, you know, one of these sort of, you know, incendiary personalities. He's going to come and tell Australia what, you know, how we're going to save ourselves for political correctness and that sort of junk. And it's just, yeah, he sold a bunch of tickets apparently, but, you know, I'm not sure who to.
It's interesting, as you mentioned, after the comments that Milo made that seemed to be sort of open to the idea of pedophilia, he lost a lot in America. He got dropped from Breitbart. He lost one of his major funders. Why do you think he thought Australia was a soft touch? Is there something about the development of the right-wing movement here that made him think that we were, you know, going to sell a lot of tickets for him?
Yeah, look, I think I've thought about this question a lot, and I'm not sure if, like, which one sort of came first out of these two things. Like, I'm not sure whether it's he wanted to come out here, and a guy like Max Markson, who is a pretty notorious sort of publicist, he also looks after Mark Latham and Alan Jones and someone else. Sort of, he's doing like a book for like Linehelm, I think. Like he's doing publicists for all that sort of stuff. So I'm not sure if Markson was like, I'm already in his realm of Mark Latham's. Maybe I'll get this Milo guy who Latham and Bolt and all those sort of people love. Like he goes on Bolt all the time, Andrew Bolt show on Sky. Goes on Alan Jones' show on the radio and that sort of thing. Or
he's been on commercial TV as well,
yeah,
hasn't
he? He's gone on like Sunrise. Yeah. He's been on, I think he went on one of the, not the Today Show, but like the morning show on Channel 9. Yep. Studio 10, I think he had a crack at Jessica Rowe over her hair, which I thought was really weird because they basically had the same haircut. Like, he got up really prominently in his press conference and he's like, oh, Jessica Rowe's, you know, shaved head feminist and she's got the bleached hair. I'm like, dude, your hair is like almost the same. Like, she might have like a number one razor on her side. You got like a number three, man. What are you talking
number
about?
Number three is what I got this week, actually.
Very good.
It's just, it's a very weird situation. And I think there is this sort of growing movement in Australia that is, you know, receptive to this sort of thing. Like, you know, that's why Mark Latham gets viewers and that's why, you know, he keeps appearing on commercial TV and on radio and he's a commentator and, like, he's, you know, in certain demographics, he's very much derided and very much sort of laughed at because he's a bit of a moron. But, like, you know, there's people in Australia that respond to that sort of thing. They're anti-political correctness, they're anti-18C, they're, you know, anti-white racism, well, whatever sort of stuff you want to talk about, and he's just that kind of in that sort of realm of people, and you know, he said he sold 10,000 tickets, so that's not, you know, it's not a massive, enormous number. He's not going to be selling at a stadium anytime soon, but there is an appetite for that sort of thing in Australia, and I think it's a very weird thing, and I think we're going to see more of it in the next couple of years because it doesn't seem like it's going away, and I'm not sure if there's going to be more of these Milo types imported from the US that are going to come over here, because there are the types of along the his sort of lines, but. Yeah, watch his face, I reckon.
Then, when you were talking about the press conference earlier, Josh, you were talking about how so a lot of the questions were like pretty soft questions. They were either weird ones about 18C or they were just ones for him to kind of rant on about what he does. But and that doesn't seem like an ideal way to cover someone like him. But you obviously attended the press conference, so presumably your perspective isn't that we should ignore him. Like, what do you think the media could and should be doing better around these kinds of things?
Well, I think it's important that we put this sort of stuff in context. Like, you know, it's so easy to treat a guy like this as like, oh, wacky controversial opinions. Here he is to talk about feminists and that sort of thing. And like, you know, it's very easy to sort of paint him as this sort of pantomime act where he gets up and he just says controversial things like, you know, like a dummy. You pull a string on, he says this sort of, you know, pre-canned phrase, feminism is cancer, that sort of thing. But I think it's really important as well that when we talk about people like this, you don't just get tempted to only stick onto those big important, you know, big sort of controversial things that will get a headline. Because like, I waited until the end of that press conference. I was there to kind of watch more than to cover it. I ended up writing a story about it because I thought it wasn't worth writing a story about. I went to sort of watch the spectacle of it, I guess. And it got towards the end of the press conference and no one had asked him about the Nazi stuff.
Right.
And no one had asked him about Richard Spencer. And I put my hand up and I went, what's going on here? Like, you know, do you apologize for this? Do you think it's important? Like, again, I wasn't planning on writing a story. And by that point in the press conference, I knew I wasn't going to be writing a story. But it seemed to me either that every journalist there, again, I'm not sure what of these two options it was, either every journalist there was not aware of this part of the story, of this part of his checkered, very controversial past, to know that he has been caught singing karaoke in front of neo-Nazis, you know, actual Nazi guys that walk around with swastikas and that sort of stuff, jackboot sort of wearing guys.
Yeah, and I for some reason it's really stuck with me, the anecdote from the BuzzFeed story that his like email password, I think, was longknives1290, which is a reference to Hitler's purge of Nazi leadership, and also the date when the Jews were expelled from England. Mm. So,
Jesus,
when your email password is like
that's the thing. Yeah, and he batted this question. Like, I'm not gonna be like, oh, I unsettled Milo. Like, he seemed like for the first point in the whole press conference, it seemed like he was a little bit taken aback. Like, he wasn't expecting someone to ask him about this. Right. I wasn't sure if he thought maybe that Australians hadn't read this report, or it wouldn't be able to follow him.
We wouldn't get BuzzFeed here.
Wouldn't be able to follow him across the ocean from America to Australia. But no one asked him about it. And it was just bizarre. And like, I didn't watch any of the TV news coverage that night. I don't know what people included in their reports and that sort of thing. But I think it's important to put this sort of stuff in context and go, yes, it's very easy to talk about Milo. And the Daily Mail have done it this way. Like, I saw someone tweet about it. I didn't, you know, confirm this for myself, but it was something like 10 or 11 articles they put up about him.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That day.
Yeah, yeah.
It might have even been used tweeted. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's just like every story with its own. Milo says feminism is cancer. Milo says, you know, Clem Ford is a whatever. Milo says Jessica Rowe is a blah, blah, blah. And they're all separate stories. And it's like, what are we doing here? Like, you know, it's so easy to talk about this guy as just a, like I said, like a wind-up kind of act, but, like, it's because he's not a good dude.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because I think we're running out of time, so I just want to get this last question in, but it's not only the Daily Mail type media that are having trouble covering the right wing. There was a big controversy last week over the way the New York Times covered this Nazi sympathiser in Ohio. And a lot of people said it was too soft. Like, do we want to know that Nazis own 4 cats and like cooking and listening to the radio? Like, is that valuable? I mean, the argument is that this shows you that the Nazi sympathiser can live next door. It, you know, humanises them and makes it, us realise that they could be around us. But it is interesting to think, to come up with a strategy to cover this responsibly. Can you write about Nazi sympathisers without writing about the victims of Nazi sympathisers? Is the picture complete to cover these people when you only cover who they are and not who they affect?
That's a tough one. And I think, you know, we haven't had to deal with Nazis for a long time in the media. So I think people are still working.
It's a good time, wasn't it?
People are still having to work this out, I think. And we're sort of working out how we're going to do this and what the best way to do it and that sort of thing is. And, you know, we all know what the Nazis did. We don't know what Hitler was about and that sort of thing. But, like, for us in, you know, 2017 turning into 2018, it's a long way to look back to the 1940s and World War II and that sort of thing and actually put in context what all that stuff was about. You know, if you're a Nazi sympathiser, it's not just that you like wearing swastikas and walking around in jackboots and stuff. Like, you're, like, you know, tied to this ideology. There's this, you know, let's exterminate all the Jews in the gas chambers and stuff. And, you know, that profile is really interesting because, like you say, you know, do people need to know that this guy has 4 cats and he likes his coffee a certain way and that sort of thing? I think it's really important that we put stuff in context like that. You know, I'm not saying I agree with every way that story was portrayed, but I think it's really important for us to be able to say, these guys can be anywhere. They don't have to be the guys that are marching around in the jackboots, waving the Nazi flags, you know, singing German, you know, chants and that sort of thing. These can be regular guys next door to you. And I think it's important that we see that and that, you know, we're not just saying, oh, he's not a Nazi because he's a nice guy. It's like, well, you can be a nice guy and a Nazi too, really. Like, well, that's not the best way to put things. You know what I mean? Like, it can be a regular looking person. You can be a regular looking person.
Nice to his mum. And, totally. And still hate black people.
Exactly. That's what I was going for. Thank you for saying that.
So moving swiftly along, we have our favourite segment.
My favourite segment. Everyone's favourite segment.
Backchat Roulette.
It's gonna have to be a quick one.
Yeah,
this morning.
Indeed. Osman, what do you got?
So my thing, remember Martin Tricelli, the farmer bro who did a lot of dodgy
Martin
stuff?
Tricelli.
And he's one of the things that he was most famously made enemies of the world over was how we bought the Wu-Tang Clan album Once Upon a Time in Shell in the one copy and then refused to play it or like do anything with it. He's now been convicted of like securities fraud. He lied to investors. And as part of the verdict, prosecutors, like government prosecutors have asked him to hand over that copy of the Wu-Tang Clan album.
No way.
So we may finally... So Wu-Tang Clan get their money from Martin Tricelli, and we, the public, will all get access to it.
Win-win.
Hopefully. It's a win-win.
That's amazing.
Win-win-win.
Win-win-win, because also... Tricelli's going to jail too. It's like...
That's insane.
It's like the best news story of 2017, I reckon.
Oh, man.
Josh, what caught your eye this week?
I don't even want to talk about it. I want to think it's all about this. But no, it's the Sam Dastyari thing. Sure. Like, it's just, you know, got... done for, you know, got demoted from the Labour sort of, you know, shadow ministry, whatever positions he was in, you know, about a year ago because he, you know, took this money that he wasn't supposed to take from a Chinese donor and, you know, he got and worked his way, you know, spent some time in the wilderness and worked his way back up to be, I think, deputy whip of Labour in the Senate and came out this week that he went to that same guy again and, you know, told him that he might be under surveillance from the authorities and to, you know, leave your phone inside so we can have a chat and, you know, that sort of thing. It's just like, what are you doing, man? Like, and his defense is like, oh, I didn't give him any top secret material. It's like, you know, like, I know Sam Dastyari, I cover, you know, I've interviewed him a lot of times, like, you know, say a lot of him in the halls in Parliament when I go to Parliament, that sort of thing. But like, you got, man, what are you doing? Like, you can't do this. You can't go around and telling the guy he might be under ASIO surveillance and, you know, maybe be a bit careful what you say. It doesn't matter. You can't do that. You're a senator.
Yeah. Totally.
Such a weird story. So mine quickly is R.I.P. Lil Peep. This R.I.P. was a US rapper who died a week or so ago. But I want to recommend particularly the New York Times podcast. It's a podcast they have about popular music, basically. But they did a really interesting episode about Lil Peep. And so Lil Peep was part of this genre that might be called SoundCloud rap. It's interesting. It's kind of like emo and rap together. Like, there's a lot of rapping about mental health and depression and Xanax and like sort of mood, you know, we're way ahead, away from the sort of party vibes. It's more about like just surviving. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that this can be a super popular genre of music at the same time, like Trump is in the White House and as well really engaged, like activism going on in America. I just like don't understand what's going on in America when all these three things can be happening at the same time. It's a really big issue to talk about in 30 seconds.
I know. Podcast, I haven't heard this yet, but Popcast is hands down my favorite podcast.
But yeah,
so
check out the Little Peep episode on Popcast and you might get, you know, just a little inkling into what the youth of America are into right now.
I want to hear a whole segment on this next time, guys. This is interesting.
Yeah, come back next week.
We should do that.
30 seconds.
That's all we got time for. But Josh Butler from HuffPo, thank you so much for joining us on Backchat.
Yeah, thanks.
Agenda is up next. We got to shout out our producer, Natalie Sekulowska. Thanks, as usual. Have a great weekend, team. Ariel, play us out.
I will. This is Sampology with Thicker Than Water.